You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. We have a new jobs report out this morning that I'll be going over. This is the last jobs report for President Obama. Now, I have a slightly different opinion on this. I think any president, doesn't matter when it's Democratic president or Republican president, when they take office for the first at least 6 months, some would even say a year, the results really belong to the past president. There's a lag. So why this is the last, this is the January jobs report. It came out in February, but it's for the month of January. It does give us a way to compare when Barack Obama started and where he ended in terms of how many jobs were created. And by my estimation, at least he's short, probably about 10 million jobs. And I'll go over that in a minute, or after I go over the first segment, which is probably more important. Now, if you just looked at the jobs report without any context, you would say it was a good report. Not a great report, not an outstanding report, not mediocre, but a good report, because over 200,000 jobs were created. But you got to understand something. If you want to decrease the unemployment rate by a tenth of a percent, as well as take care of people that are entering the labor force, you need 300,000 jobs a month. We rarely have had that number. It's been hovering around 200,000, sometimes higher than 200,000, sometimes lower than 200,000. We're going at, in my mind, the economy is stagnating. We're going at two-thirds speed. We're going not at full speed, and that's why this is by far the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression. And that's not good, because you have millions of Americans that would like to work but can't find work. Many talk show hosts highlight the fact that approximately between 94 million and 95 million Americans are not in the labor force. I don't doubt the number, but you need to realize that some of those people don't want to be in the labor force. They're retired. Many retired early, believe it or not. Others are going to college, and others are stay-at-home moms and dads. So of that 94, 95 million, somewhere between 20 and 30 million, however, would like to work. Even though technically, by the way the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is part of the Department of Labor, counts who's employed, who's unemployed, and who's out of the labor force, those are the three categories. By their definition, approximately 94 to 95 million are out of the labor force. If you ask those people, are you looking for a job? They'll say, yeah, I'm looking for a job. And if you'd offered them a permanent full-time job, decent paying job with benefits, they'd take it in a minute. They simply can't find it. And this has been going on for months. It's been going on for 8 years because we've had economic policies that simply are not growing the economy. You need an economy growing, especially when you come out of a recession, growing above the historical average, which is about 3.5%, between 3 and 3.5%. It depends on when you start and when you end and how exactly you're measuring it. But most economists would agree that over long periods of time, the U.S. economy economy has been growing somewhere between 3 and 3.5%. And it should be growing at that. That's the normal average. Actually, it can grow at 4 or 5, and I would even say 6% if you had the right economic policies. We obviously don't have the right economic policies when you're growing at 2, 2.5. And we will have, the end of the month, we'll have our second estimate as to what the fourth quarter real GDP numbers, and that's the one I'm really looking for, and that will give you a better idea over the 8 years of the Obama administration how the economy has grown. It's been subpar, and that's not good, because that means why many millions of Americans are working. Near about 152 million Americans are working. Many are working part-time jobs. Many are working 2 part-time jobs because they can't find a good-paying, permanent full-time job, mainly because of the negative impacts of Obamacare. Because many employers today, to avoid the cost of providing health insurance, what they do is hire part-timers, and they keep their total payroll under 50. Now, that should all change under President Trump, and it needs to change. But what is really the drag, and this is going to be the first story, right now, and this has been going on really for over a year, Congress, the House of Representatives in particular, but also the Senate, have been considering tax reform, and they should be. The problem is they're timid. Oh, they have some good ideas, but they don't deal with the fundamental problem. And that's it. They want to retain the income tax as the basis for taxation. That is the fundamental flaw, mistake they're making, as is President Trump. They need to think out of the box. It's not like they're not ideas that have been around for many years. The one I'm thinking of is the fair tax. And I've given shows on it. I'm going to give a quick summary of it because many people are just still not familiar with the fair tax. There are upwards of 100 people today in Congress that would support a fair tax. But the problem is the leadership. It's the Republican leadership because there's a vested special interest that wants the system the way it is. They'll tinker with it. They'll make some reforms, but you see, fundamental tax reform doesn't happen every 2, 4, 6 years. It usually happens after 20 years of finally realizing that what we have is a mess. I don't think there's few, if any, Americans, except the people that like the status quo, that understand and really think that our federal income tax system is the way to go. It's too complicated. And it cost mainly businesses, but people that pay most of the taxes, over $500 billion every single year to comply. That's so-called compliance costs. And I remember when I started to get into this many, many years ago, I was amazed. The number kept creeping upwards and upwards and upwards. I think when I started, it was maybe $200 billion, maybe even less than that. Now it's over $500 billion. That's a waste of money, folks. A waste of people's time and money filling out tax returns to determine how much you owe. I like to call the income tax system legacy tax. Why a legacy tax? This is the old way to do it. It's not the modern way to do it. It's certainly not efficient. It's certainly not fair. It's not transparent at all. So what should we do? Now, what I'm going to outline is my version of the fair tax. The fair tax resulted, a number of businessmen got together and they put up some money out of Houston, about 20 years ago, I believe. And they hired a group of economists and basically said, please design a tax system, an ideal tax system. Now, they didn't have any, they didn't know what the answer was going to be. As a matter of fact, the answer somewhat surprised them. Didn't surprise me, but it did surprise many people. What the economists came up with, and it was revenue neutral, and this is important, that it would collect roughly the same amount of taxes that is currently being collected now with income taxes as well as payroll or Social Security taxes. I think partly that was a mistake, but I understand why they did that. Because they wanted to say, under this new system, you'd collect the same amount of money. Their answer was you need a broad-based consumption tax. And the rate they came up with was 23%. But what was unique was a tax prebate. And the reason for the tax rebate is they recognized, I recognize, that some people simply shouldn't be paying taxes. Actually, more than half the population, I would say up to 60%, shouldn't be paying any taxes because they're simply not earning enough money to maintain a standard of living that Americans would call not great, just average at best. So they wanted it very much to have a progressive characteristic of the fair tax, so they came up with a prebate. Now, let me explain the fair tax first and then my version of it. We would do away with, in other words, we would replace all federal taxes, in specifically all income taxes, individuals as well as corporations, partnerships, all estate and gift taxes, all capital gains taxes, the minimum tax, the alternative minimum tax, and all payroll taxes. Now, most people at work today, their biggest tax is not income tax. It is Social Security taxes, by far. That is a regressive tax, just like a sales tax is regressive. And many people compare a broad-based consumption tax with the sales tax. I don't, because of the prebate feature, which I'll get into in a couple minutes. So the rate they came up with was 23%, and the way it works is when you go to the checkout counter, let's say, I always use this example because it's the easiest to follow. When you go down the aisle, you'll see prices of goods and services. Let's say, and I did this yesterday, I bought a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. I was running low on milk, and I wanted to make sure. And I think I paid 85 cents for the loaf of bread, and this will surprise you because it was on sale, $1.59 for the milk, a gallon of skim milk. Now, normally, I go to another store, and they were selling the milk at $2.49, and that's more or less the regular price, about $2.50. And they sell bread. They have a whole range of prices, but most of their bread, the big sellers are a dollar loaf. So to keep the numbers simple, I'm going to use a dollar a loaf. And it's really an example to illustrate how the tax works. Now, when you buy a loaf of bread today, and this is very important that you understand this, and it applies to all goods and services, included in that price for a loaf of bread is all the federal income taxes, Social Security taxes, that the businesses involved in getting that loaf of bread to you had to pay. It's embedded in the price. It's approximately, and this is an estimate, approximately 23 cents are those taxes. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more, but that's a good working number. And that's where they came up with the 23% tax rate. Remember, they assume revenue neutral. If you were to pass a fair tax and replace all these federal taxes, the price of bread is going to remain the same. Are you with me so far? It's not an additional tax, is the key point. We're replacing all federal taxes that are currently in the price of your goods and services that you're buying. I emphasize this because this is the hardest thing for people to get their mind around. Because I've heard it once, I've heard it hundreds of times. Well, the fair tax is just another sales tax, and I don't want to pay another 23 cents. I'm already paying too much taxes. In Texas, we have a sales tax of 8.25%. Some states it's much higher. Some states, I think there's one or two that don't have a sales tax yet. Most states have not only a sales tax, they have an income tax. We don't have an income tax in Texas. That's why a lot of people are moving to Texas. Assume for a moment the fair tax passes into law. It becomes the law of the land, and Donald Trump supports it. Congress gets behind it, and we start off fresh. No more income taxes. So when you get your check each month, or whenever you get paid, there's no deductions for Social Security, Medicare, disability, unemployment. There are no payroll taxes, and that's what are called payroll taxes. And there's no withholding for federal income tax. In other words, your gross check is your paycheck. Now, when I explain this to most people, they like that. Then I explain the 23% consumption tax. Now, they sort of say, well, wait a minute. That means I got to pay 23 cents on everything I buy. I said, yeah, but you're already paying it. Well, what do you mean I'm paying it? And then I go over the loaf of bread example. A dollar of that dollar, 23 cents is embedded taxes. It's included, okay? It's a better way to look at it. And that's where the 23 cents comes, where the 23% comes into play. Now, some people, critics have said, well, wait a minute. It's 23 cents on a dollar less that, so it's 23 cents on 77 cents, so that's roughly a 30% tax. No. We're trying to compare apples to apples. When you get, under the current system, your check, whatever that check is, taxes are withheld. So we're trying to make an apples-to-apples comparison. That's why the people that put together the fair tax did it that way. It's like they're 3 feet to the yard. Are you talking yards or you're talking feet? That's another way to look at it. Now, and this is the part that usually gets people's attention. Most Americans, I would even say the vast majority of Americans, there's some that disagree, believe that taxes shouldn't be regressive. We shouldn't, the incidence of taxes, and that's the word they use, shouldn't fall disproportionately on low income or poor people. And that's the first criticism I usually hear. Well, it's not right for poor people to have to pay a consumption tax. It's not right. And guess what? I sort of agree with that. I say sort of because I can see both sides here. But they're not. Now, why aren't they? And this is why it's not a sales tax. Every taxpayer, the richest to the poorest, will pay the same under the fair tax, 23%. And we'll get a tax prebate, and it's tied to the number of the people in the household. If it's a husband and wife and two children, it's four people. Each will get a prebate, and the prebate is for what? First of all, a prebate is a check. You will get a check each month for a dollar figure, and that dollar figure is tied to the poverty rate and has been going up every year. Now, I'm not going to get into the dollar figure of the fair tax because I'm going to show you something better. And I don't want to bog it down, and I have a limited amount of time. So you get a monthly check. What is it for? To pay for the necessities of life. That makes the tax progressive. It's an offset. Now, how can we make the fair tax even better for everybody? I wanted to simplify it and easy to understand. The rate I used, and it's a starting rate, and it's not locked in. It can go down. It could go up. I doubt it. But it should go down over time. It's to make the tax rate 20%. Now, that means you're getting a tax cut because today in the price of goods today is roughly 23 cents. And that assumes that most, if not all, of the people that are selling goods will pass that savings on. They might not do it. The point is this. You'll be paying, if you buy a loaf of bread, go to the checkout counter, pay the dollar, 20 cents of that dollar is going to the federal government, less a small fee for the retailer for collecting the tax. And that's a detail, folks. Think of it as 20 cents goes to the federal government. On every new, and I emphasize new, good that you buy or service. Keep in mind, you won't be paying any income taxes and no more Social Security payroll taxes for Medicare, Social Security disability, and unemployment. So we have a single tax replacing all federal taxes. And that's important to understand. In other words, it makes our tax system very, very, very simple. Now, how did I make it better? First, the rate is 20%, not 23. That in and of itself is a tax cut. I tie the tax prebate, in other words, that monthly check, not to the size of the household, but the fact that you're an individual citizen born here, you're an American citizen, and you're 18 years or older. So if you have a husband and wife with two kids, they would each get $1,000 a month tax prebate. So the husband gets $1,000, the wife gets $1,000, the children get nothing because they're dependents of their mother and father until they're 18. So that's $2,000 a family would get if it's a husband or wife. If it's a single person, it's $1,000 a month. And let me use the single person as an example. Over the year, every month, they get a $1,000 check, so a total of $12,000, they get a check from the government. That check is to do what? Pay for the taxes on the essentials of living. What are the essentials of living or the necessities of living? Everyone needs food. Everyone needs clothing. Everyone needs a roof over their head. Everyone in today's world needs transportation and insurance, electricity, gasoline, you talk to anybody, and the prices vary across the country, I need to say that. But if you're going to live, and I said, you're not going to get wealthy here, you need to buy those things. Now, if you make a lot of money, you can buy a lot more, but you need to buy the necessities. And that the price of those necessities will vary from where you're living. If you live in some expensive cities, you pay a lot more money, period, for the necessities of life. If you live in a rural area, you might be paying a lot less. It depends where you live. But you're going to have only one tax system that it's for everybody. We're not making adjustments for how much the cost of living is. Now, I want you to follow this example. Assume you're single and you work and you're making $5,000 a month. In other words, $60,000 a year. And you spend every single cent of it. You don't save a penny. And in many cities, you'll be paying, you're going to be paying a lot in what? Rent or a mortgage payment, electricity, utilities, garbage. You're going to need a car, insurance, food, clothing. It all adds up. So it's not an unreasonable example for someone that's single, earning $60,000 to spend $60,000 on consumption. Economists call this consumption. You're buying goods and services. Now, what you need to understand is the tax is 20%. When you go to the checkout and check out, in the price of that good or service, 20 cents is the tax. So everyone, and I mean everyone, is paying the 20% tax. And everyone, richest to poorest, is getting from the government every month a single check for $1,000. And again, if someone's married, the husband and wife would each get a check. Doesn't matter whether you're working or not. The check is to pay the taxes for the necessities of life. So if you're spending $60,000, 20% of $60,000 is what? $12,000. So the government sends you $12,000. And over the year, as you can, it sends you each month $1,000 total for the year of $12,000. And each month you're buying necessities of life, so you're paying taxes of $12,000. So if you spend $60,000 or less, first of all, if you're paying exactly spending $60,000, you're paying $12,000. The prebate offsets it. You're paying no taxes. If you spend less, you actually, that $12,000 you can spend on whatever you want. So if you're not earning enough, let's say you're not earning, let's take the worst case here. You're not earning anything. You don't have any savings. You're not earning anything. Zero. For whatever reason. You can't find a job. You'll be at least getting a $1,000 check each month that you can spend. And that will cover some goods and services. Most people can't live on $12,000. Many people do, but they have to. You want an economic incentive for people to work. And that's one of the strong points of my version of the fair tax. It's a strong incentive for you to work. Now, keep in mind that 20% tax applies to anything. If you, let's say you're very wealthy and you're spending $60 million a year, well, you're still going to pay 20%. $12 million will be the tax. I'm sure some of you would like that problem. My point is this. Approximately somewhere between 50% to 60% of all U.S. citizens, I'm talking adults here, would not be paying any taxes. Now, that might surprise you, but today, under the current income tax system, the bottom 50% that pay taxes, what's the total taxes they're paying? Less than 3%. It sounds radical, but it isn't radical. The people that are paying the taxes are really the top 1 and 5 and 10%. They pay the lion's share of income taxes today. Income taxes. But what's the bigger tax? Payroll taxes. And that's a strong point here. Most people today that are working pay Social Security taxes that are very, very regressive. What you want to do is encourage work. You want people to, they decide, you decide when you're going to pay the taxes, when you buy something. So you always have the choice. You can save your money and invest it, and none of the gains on your investment are taxed. There are no capital gains. That tax has gone away. So if you buy a home and then sell it 10, 15, 20 years from now, and there's a capital gain, there's no tax on it. Same thing of a mutual fund, a 401k, no tax on it. It encourages investment, and that encourages capital formation. Why I'm emphasizing this is the United States economy needs to be growing at 4, 5, 6%. That's what Donald Trump wants. That's what I want. And to do that, we need to encourage business formation as well as capital formation or investment. If we had a fair tax less, there would be no tax on capital and there'd be no tax on labor or income. We would be unique in the world and we would have an economic boom. But more important, what would happen? You've heard in the news, and Donald Trump has mentioned this, but others have as well, that there's at least $2 trillion, that's 2,000 billion, some would say it's as high as $5 trillion, of funds that U.S. multinational corporations have abroad. They invested abroad, they pay taxes abroad, but they keep their money abroad because if they brought it back to the United States, they'd be taxed again. And Donald Trump wants to lower that tax. I think he's mentioned 10%. My point is this. You don't need a penalty or a tax at all. You want it to be zero. You see, if there's no tax on capital gains and no tax on income, they bring it back and they invest it. You want strong economic incentives. And that's what a fair tax does, a broad-based consumption tax does. It encourages businesses to first start startups. They're right now on it. They've been very, very low. They call it births and deaths of businesses. You want a lot of births. You want a baby boom in businesses. And that's why we need to go to a broad-based consumption tax. It provides the incentives you need for people to start businesses, invest their money. If you're a business in buildings, vehicles, computers, software, anything that you need to run your business. And for the individual, it encourages hard work, savings. Historically, the savings rate of the United States citizens is low compared to other nations. It's terrible. And there's a reason for that. Before they ever get their paycheck home, the government is taking money from in terms of payroll taxes. So this is very much a win-win-win situation for everybody, including the government. Because if the economy is growing at 4, 5, 6%, what increases? Tax revenue, folks. Tax revenue. For all you big government types that want to spend money in the government for infrastructure or whatever, you want a boom and where the unemployment rate is under 3%, not at 4.8% or higher. Ideally, you would like the unemployment rate to be under 3%. You're never going to get to zero because people are always between jobs. And you want the labor participation rate to be above 67%. It has been in that range. It might surprise you, both under Clinton and Bush, it hit 67%. Now, it didn't stay there because when we went into the Great Recession, what happened? Yeah, you're right. The labor participation rate crashed. It's under 63%. It finally hit, well, it's been bouncing around under 63%. It's now at 62.9%. You see, in my mind, what's a good jobs report? The labor participation rate is going up, up, and up, and ideally, eventually, it's 67%. It's way below that. And the unemployment rate is going down, down, and down. Our unemployment rate has been stuck at between 4.5% and 5%. That's okay, but it's not great. There have been times in U.S. history, not recently, that we've had below 3% unemployment. You'd have to go back quite a few years, but it has happened. It happens when we have an economic boom. And what we're trying to do is get out from this lousy growth rate that's below the trend line to above the trend line. First step is to get back to the trend line of 3.5%. And if we were growing at 3.5%, what would you see in terms of a jobs report? 300,000 jobs created. Most likely more than that, but at least 300,000. And you need 300,000. Why? Every month, and you get a debate as to what the number is. Economists say that the new entrants to the labor force, in other words, high school graduates or dropouts or college dropouts or graduates that go for their first-time job, every month you have anywhere between 130,000 to 150,000. This is for the United States. I think it's the high number, by the way. I'm on the high end. I actually think it's more. But you need at least that to keep up with the growth in the population. In other words, the demographic growth of the fact that every single day, week, month, you have people that enter the labor force. They're looking for their first job. So if it's $150,000 a month to keep up with that, you do the math times 12, that's 1.8 million. You need at least new jobs, 1.8 million. If you want to take the low number of $130,000, that's a little above 1.5 million. So a rough range on an annual basis, you need somewhere between 1.5 million and 1.8 million of new jobs just to keep up with what? New entrants into the labor market. Now, if you want to decrease the unemployment rate by a tenth of a percent, you need approximately 150,000 jobs. So using my example, you need 150,000 to keep up with population growth, new entrants to the labor force, and 150,000 to try to reduce the unemployment rate. In total, you need approximately, all of these are estimates, including the government's, you need approximately 300,000 jobs a month. Now, 1 month does not make you a hero. You need it consistently, 300,000, 300,000, 300,000. You'd like a lot more. Any president would, and including Barack Obama, would have loved a 300,000 job report. January, the U.S. economy created non-farm payroll jobs. Go to Table B, very first line. Total non-farm payroll created in January of 27. This is a preliminary number. They always change the numbers up and down. 227,000 jobs. Not bad, but not great. You need more jobs. And that's my point. And I'm going to make a big point here. When Barack Obama started, took the oath of office, at that point, in other words, the last jobs report for Bush, and remember, this is in the middle of a recession, in round numbers, 142 million. At the peak of the boom, which was in December, November, December timeframe, it was about 144 million. In other words, we lost a good 2 million jobs, nearly 2 million jobs. And remember, employment lags an economic recovery. We reached bottom, because I want to be very clear about this. We reached bottom in terms of the low point, in terms of employed people, was 138 million, and that was in December of 2009. The economy was recovering then, started to recover in July of 2009. The economy was growing again, creating jobs, but the number employed people reached a bottom of 138 million. What is it today? 152 million. So we have created a lot of jobs, but we're not that far from where we started. 152 million is where it is right now. At the peak of the last boom, we were at, and that was in 2007. I know I'm probably losing you. And I don't mean to. About 147 million, rounded. 146 million, 147 million. So we've had some growth. If you measure it from boom to where we are, 5 million jobs. If you measure it from the bottom of 138 million, we've had 12 million jobs created. We're short, though, ladies and gentlemen. And the reason is we're not growing at the rates that we need to do. If you want 300,000 jobs, you need to be growing at 3.5%. And to do that, what do you need? You need a tax system that encourages people to work, encourages entrepreneurs to start businesses, and it encourages investment. That's what you need to do. And we need to have a new tax system in place as soon as possible. And we're still debating and talking about it. If you want the economy to start growing, if you want to make America great again, Donald Trump needs to be a lot bolder than he is. I think he's going to go along with the Republican Party establishment and go with their tax reform. It's missing a golden opportunity. There's a lot of support amongst the people of this country, as well as their representatives and senators in Congress for the fair tax. Their fair tax is not new. I've given you my alternative. And if Donald Trump wants to give his alternative, the important point here is to get away from the income tax system. Scrap it, throw it in the trash can, and go to a broad-based consumption tax. It eliminates at least $500 billion right off the bat in compliance costs. It will reduce the IRS to a token force. You would, in essence, be doing away with it. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, it's a tax system for this century that would cause money to flow into this country, and we would be booming again with high economic growth rates of 4, 5, 6%, tax revenues increasing, people saving money, investing money, new businesses, and more jobs. We would put America back to work again, and that means everybody that's looking for a job could easily find a job because they would have many, many job offers. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.